Mark Scheifele is angry. Angry, grr. Hulk smash, grr. Mark Scheifele, not thrilled with everybody. It's one of the big stories of the day as the Winnipeg Jets do their media avails. Welcome to Hockey Central America alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Bottom of the hour, Jennifer Botterill from Hockey Night in Canada will be stopping by the program. Meanwhile, Stewie, Borney, Mark Scheifele, not a happy person today. I'm going to play some clips here. But again, to repeat the headline of the day, Justin Bourne, Mark Scheifele, not happy.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're going to play the clips. I haven't heard them all in context, but I have read a number of the things he's had to say on Twitter. Doesn't show a remarkable amount of self-awareness or self-reflection in the wake of his suspension from what I've read. So I'm glad we're going to play him.
We are going to play. Before we play these clips, Anthony Stewart, anything from what you've seen from Scheifele so far this morning, read some of the quotes, anything you'd like to weigh in on, or you just want to hear the quotes first?
Well, I'm on Twitter, but I was too busy looking at my CN Tower meme that I made and all the likes that it's getting. But the one thing I want to say is, like, I was a pretty, you know, physical player, rough and tumble player, but I never got suspended. And that wasn't for lack of intensity or lack of, the crazy gene. I just, you know, that respect, I think that's that used to be in the game is sort of gone out the window. So again, Scheifele, he's an honest player. He made a mistake. That happens. But deal with the consequences and move on now. But now you're going to have people like us sort of dissecting every word he says. It's better to say nothing, move on, get ready to go next year.
Could not disagree more. Say everything so we can do a show, damn it. And, we'll start with this. This is Mark Scheifele, so it's exit interview day for the Winnipeg Jets. And Mark Scheifele shared, there's a couple of comments we're going to play here. The second one's a pretty lengthy one where he goes into his thoughts on his head coach Paul Maurice and his thoughts on the media. In the meantime, this is Mark Scheifele on his setbacks and most specifically his suspension. Mark Scheifele of the Jets.
You know, like I said before, John Rahm said, you know, the way we handle setbacks is what defines us. You know, that's what you have to do. You know, there's going to be setbacks in your life. There's going to be bad things that are going to happen. There's going to be good things that are going to happen. You know, and I'm very, very lucky to, you know, I have, you know, amazing people around me, and I'm a very, very fortunate person. So, you know, I can't let one bad thing, you know, knock me down. Obviously it's crushing to, you know, that my season was ended, by that. And I wasn't able to play in this series. You know, I thought I was going to be tried to shut down by Philip Deneau, and, you know, it was Department of Player Safety that shut me down. So that definitely sucks.
Okay, so that's the money quote right there. I thought it was going to be Philip Deneau that shut me down. Turns out it was the Department of Player Safety. I get where he's coming from. I understand it. I think we all like defiant, proud hockey players. Scheifele is clearly one. Like, I know, Borney, there's a little bit of lack of self-awareness there and lack of, well, I did this and can learn from it, et cetera, brain cramp, whatever. How do you greet that quote?
I don't know. Like, is it much different from a speeding ticket when you are speeding and you're mad at the cop for giving you the speeding ticket? Like, you were speeding. You know, to me, it's, you know, the Department of Player Safety didn't shut him down. He shut himself down. He made a violent, dangerous play. You know, I didn't agree with the number of games that he got suspended, but you leave yourself open to that sort of thing when you put someone else at risk. And he put, don't make no mistake about it, I mean, he put Evans at serious, serious risk with the hit he threw. So, you know, he's saying bad things happen to us. Well, you know, sometimes we do that to ourselves, and there's just consequences to the bad things we do. I don't know if anything was necessarily done to him here, and it just feels a little bit to me like he feels like he's been wronged throughout all this.
Yeah, I want to talk about the hit a little bit more, and I think it's, you know, everyone's general reaction. If you're driving and a squirrel jumps out in front of your road, you don't just hit the gas. Your natural reaction is to swerve out of the way. And I remember as a player, like, I would have guys lined up like that. I'd be like, you know what? I could flatten this guy, but I can actually hurt myself. So it's a very, very dangerous play for both players. And there's only select guys that make that hit. So at the end of the day, it was a bad hit. Any way you dice it, I don't care You know, how many soliloquies Paul Maurice talks about the hit and the player and how great, you know, of a person he is. He made a mistake. That's fine. It happens. But you have to deal with the consequences and move on. It doesn't help to really now try to embarrass the league and make these comments, because now the microscope's going to be under Winnipeg, where they're not going to be getting these calls next year, or they're going to be getting more and more calls not going their way. So there's no real winning in this situation. I think you just have to move on.
Stu, let me ask you a question about NHLers. So I'm just listening to the Mark Scheifele clips and talking about how it was the Department of Player Safety shut him down. It wasn't Philippe Deneau. It's a money clip. Like, that's the one that's going to get circulated. That's the one that everyone's going to hang on to. Do players really feel that way? Or are you programmed to always believe that you've done nothing wrong? If you listen to that clip, that's Scheifele saying, like, they're out. They're essentially out to get me. I don't know why, but they're out to get me.
I think it's because it's the playoffs, right? And usually now with the intensity and everything getting ramped up, it's almost the thinking that everything goes. There's no suspensions in playoffs unless you do something really, really bad. And I think the overall consensus has been, hey, this hit in the regular season is, or in years past, isn't that bad, but there hasn't really been a precedent. But I think it's because it's the playoffs. There's a sense of, hey, I can do anything. It's the playoffs. So I think that's probably why he's frustrated, because he's saying in his mind, you know, the rule is usually double, you know, for one game in the playoffs is two games in the regular season. He's thinking in his mind, there's no way that was an 8-game regular season hit, so I'm sure he's frustrated by that.
Borny, what do you think? Players really think that way?
You know, I guess there's a level of, like, confidence and pride, and, like, you're always the main character in the movie type of thing, where you just can't believe it actually happened to you, and you're the one that, you know, gets the hard punishment. I don't know what he's thinking here, but even if that's what he's thinking, he's got to be more careful with his words. You know, a guy was pretty seriously hurt. He, you know, it was a violent play. You know, this isn't a matter of, you know, this is a matter of apologizing. You messed up. You had a bad run here. Get back at it next year.
You see, part of me always thinks that, and I'll get to this point with Paul Maurice, part of me always thinks that players need that type of everyone's out to get me motivation. Like, when do you get to that top level? And we're going to get to this, you know, this comment that Scheifele makes about the Winnipeg Jets specifically. I mean, it's one of the things that we see specifically in hockey, this idea that it's us against the world, or me against the world, everybody's counting me out. It almost seems as if players are programmed, no matter what the situation, to always believe that they are the victim and that everyone is out to get them. The rule book is skewered against them. They don't get any breaks. That is just the default for everything around them. They've had to overcome, despite all these obstacles that everybody has placed in front of them. Like, I'm not giving them a pass on the comment. I'm just wondering how much of that is just straight up sports programming, that you need to believe that in order to compete.
I don't know if you need to believe that. I to your point, I think it's competitiveness that, you know, when there's someone in your way, you're used to having to overcome it, and this feels like another thing in his way, and, you know, to be defiant of and to believe just that, you know, you want to be out there, so you're frustrated. You know, I hear a lot of frustration in his voice, if I may play armchair psychologist on a quote.
Okay, let's get
But I just want to add quickly, Jeff, yeah. I just want to add quickly here is, you know, I think the league has a responsibility, you know, to make sure that it was a significant suspension, because what if they didn't suspend him at all? Can you imagine what would happen that next game, where you can have some real, real bad injuries? And back then, when I played 10, 15 years ago, you know, someone would have went and take a ran at Connor Hellebuyck and knocked him out. So I think they understood, like, hey, you know what? We got to put an end to this. Let's add a couple games so now everyone feels like they got their quote-unquote justice and move on and get back to playing hockey.
So here's more from Mike Scheifele then. Stu, we'll get you to comment on this one first. It's a 3-minute clip, so settle in. This is Mark Scheifele on his head coach, Paul Maurice. And before that, Mark Scheifele on the Big Bad Media. Here we go.
Well, first of all, you say, you know, a team that, you know, you guys wrote us off from the beginning. You know, you guys, the media, you know, had us not making the playoffs, being a bottom feeder in the league. So, you know, that's where, you know, you guys get caught, you know, contradicting your guys selves all the time. So, you know, you guys didn't have any hope for this team, from day one. And I think we proved you guys wrong all season long. We made the playoffs. We swept the Edmonton Oilers. We went to the second round in the playoffs. You know, obviously didn't end the way we wanted to, but, you know, I have full support in Paul Maurice, and I know I'm not alone there. You know, there's a lot of guys that love him. He's a fantastic coach. He's definitely one of the good ones in this league, and, you know, he definitely has my full support. And, you know, that's, you know, what happened in Toronto, you know, that's learning lessons. That's coaching. That's, you know, a player, you know, I'm a guy that loves to learn. I'm a guy that loves to improve my game. And I want the coach to push me. I want my peers to push me. You know, that's what makes good teams. That's what makes, you know, that's what bonds, you know, relationships is, you know, your peers, you know, your, you know, the, you know, the forms of authority pushing you for more and pushing you for better. And that's, you know, that's hockey. That's the business we're in. You want to be pushed to be better. You want to be pushed to be a better person, a better player, you know, a more hardworking player, you know, everything in this world, you want to be pushed to want more. And, you know, that only motivates you. That only motivates me as a person. And, you know, that's the way I look at every setback, at every good thing, at every bad thing. You know, you never can get too high. You never can get too low. You just have to keep pushing for more. And, you know, I thought this team pushed for more. You know, we were written off from day one of this season. You know, we have the, you know, that that's about it. We were written off from day one, and we proved people wrong all season long. And, you know, we go through that slide, you know, towards the end of the year, and we were written off again. You know, everyone wanted a Calgary Flames Edmonton Oilers series. And, you know, we proved people wrong. We made the playoffs. We won our first round. And, you know, I think that's where my head's at, is that, you know, we prove people wrong, and we want to continue to prove people wrong. You know, we don't get a lot of respect in the grand scheme of things. You know, everyone wants the, you know, Toronto Maple Leafs and the Edmonton Oilers, and the Montreal Canadiens to be going on. No one wants the Winnipeg Jets to do anything, but, you know, that's what Winnipeg is made of. You know, our community is made out of hardworking people that grind for every inch. And, you know, we're that team that wants to grind for every inch and prove people wrong on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, that's who the Winnipeg Jets are.
In wrestling, that's called a babyface promo. Everybody's out to get us, but everyone here in the local market where we live and where we compete, they understand. See, I come back to, first of all, the thing that he mentions about Toronto, that was during the Maple Leafs-Winnipeg Jets game, where Mark Scheifele was sat down by Paul Maurice for a good portion of it. But this brings me back, Stewie, work with me on this one. This brings me back to, A, Scheifele sounds very frustrated at how his season ended, Winnipeg Jets' season ended, feels that he was wronged by the Department of Player Safety, whether it should have been a suspension in his mind, whether the suspension was too long, still, he thinks something wrong has been done to him. And also, we should point out that we've talked about Mark Scheifele before being the 24/7 hockey player. This guy is all in on hockey. Some guys, when their season is done, they are done with the game, and they're off to vacation, and then they're off-season training. This is the guy that pays attention to everything. Watches all the games, reads all the articles, listens to the radio shows and the podcasts, etc. This guy knows what's happening around capital H hockey. And he's feeling in his
except for
mind
analytics,
here,
Jeff. He doesn't.
Except for analytics. No time for analytics. We can get to that later on in the career. No time for that. And still, Stewie, he's feeling, like, his overwhelming feeling is that someone or some group has wronged him and the Winnipeg Jets, and no one in his organization is getting the respect that he says they deserve. Thoughts on that?
Well, Chris? I thought I was listening to Rodney Dangerfield there for a little bit there with the no respect, but, you know, you go back and you look at Sportsnet's votes for who was winning that second round. I didn't vote, but everyone picked the Jets to win. So I don't understand the narrative saying, well, you know what, everyone's out to get us. They don't want us to win. This is a very, very talented team. Scheifele, Connors, Ehlers, Wheeler, Hellebuck, and Nett. This team is a really, really good team. And we were talking about it on this show at the beginning of the season. you know, we wouldn't be surprised if they were one of the teams that came out of this Scotiabank North Division. So I think there's got to be a little bit more accountability. And I just want to listen to, you know, maybe get the sound bites of, you know, a player like Sidney Crosby, who's been around for 15 years. And I'm sure the way that he's talking, hey, we flat out weren't good enough. Took responsibility for the season being a quote-unquote failure, because that's what winners do. So when you win and, you know, you have a pedigree for winning and then traditionally you start losing, stars and the best of the best take accountability and they take responsibility for not being good enough. So, again, I think that's something Scheifele has to learn. I think it's more semantics than anything, a little bit more of a hot take. But I think now it's you just got to take responsibility, know that you got to have a good summer in the gym and come back and do what you guys need to do.
Yeah, I think Stewie makes a really good point there about, you know, great players who win a lot and how they handle the disappointments. You know, it's a... he's been built to be a hockey player, right? Like, since he was a kid.
Yes.
You know, and
yes.
Stewie went through this too. Like, they made him into a hockey player. What did you expect when he acted like a hockey player? You know, like, he is driven to win, and he knew the right things to say to fire up that market, because I think it's reflective of how Winnipeg feels about their treatment in general from the media and the respect they get. But it's also not reflective of reality, considering, you know, pretty much everyone picked them to win that series. And I also don't think they had a tremendous amount of success this year, you know, unless your bar is super low to say we proved you guys wrong. They finished third in a soft division and won 4 hockey games. Like, it's good. They won around. But, like, relax on we proved everyone wrong about how good they are. It comes off immature, I'll be honest. It comes off as someone whose whole life has been hockey-centric, hockey-focused, and he is still in hockey and competing in hockey, and that's what he is. He's a hockey player. So, again, I don't fault him for that, but it does seem to lack a little bit of self-reflection, self-awareness, greater picture introspection, I'll say, Jeff.
Is there... To the point about the Winnipeg Jets, see, one of the things that's interesting about his comments about the Winnipeg Jets, or the beginning of the season, everybody wrote us off. Correct me if I'm wrong on this one. Weren't the majority of people at the beginning of this abbreviated season saying, we don't know what the Winnipeg Jets are going to be here? Like, wasn't that the one huge question mark? Like, we knew what Toronto was going to be. We knew what Ottawa was going to be. There's varying shades in between of your Edmontons and Calgary's and Vancouver's. Did we not look at Winnipeg and say, I really don't know? Like, we could even see them winning the division. We could see them coming in second last, not being as bad as Ottawa, but being around the bottom. Wasn't the overall feeling about the Jets, Stewie, we'll start with you, wasn't the overarching feeling about the Jets that we just don't know what's going to happen with these guys? That's what I remember back in January.
Yeah, it's funny. We look around the division and we knew what teams wanted and what their needs were, and they went out and got it. Look at Montreal. Everyone thought that they were dead in the water before this season, and they went and added all those pieces through trades and free agency. Toronto went and beefed up their lineup as well. But with Winnipeg, we knew that they needed defense. It's been, you know, 18 months now that we knew that their blue line was depleted. They had some guys outperform their cap hit, but they were very thin on the blue line. So that's why I'm sort of now, I'm not really blaming Scheifele. I'm blaming management. You guys knew you had these holes. You knew this was the quickest way to get to the semifinals, and you didn't really address the needs. And you can't say, oh, we tried to get Oleksiak. You guys should have been a little bit more proactive. So now what's going on now? And you didn't find a way to build any of your young prospects really into the lineup. So I think the future's a little more bleak than some of these other teams, because you didn't win. A lot of your prospects didn't get some major experience. And your veteran guys are sort of salty. So I think something's a little awry with this Winnipeg Jets, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's some major changes, because, again, like we talk about the definition of insanity, doing the same thing, expecting different results. I think they need to address the blue line. And, again, do they need a change up top? Maybe, maybe not.
No, they're going to love that, though. If I'm a Jets fan, I listen to him there. I bet they love what he had to say.
Oh, that's protein. That's a protein shake for them. Oh, going away.
And not to mention, like, it's cool to hate on the media now. And I'm not saying that because I am media. It's part of the political climate. That's just the reality of the world we live in. So shots in the media, that's open season. You know, I wanted to be careful to not be like, oh, well, he was, you know, you know, firing back at the media. So the tendency is like get my back up or get our backs up about it and be like, well, actually, that's not, you know, defensive. But it's just nothing he said was reality to me. That was a very just an egocentric view of how this has all played out. I love Stu's point about like Sid and how people handle failure and disappointing years in the past. That this was not that to me.
To the point about the Winnipeg Jets, how did you look at the Jets at the beginning of the season? I seem to recall the three of us sitting here going, this is like the ultimate wild card in the division. We really don't know.
Most depth up front. Right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have it in writing, but what you said, Jeff, was exactly how I said it, that this was the team that I have no idea about. Like, they could absolutely win the division, or they could finish second last. I would not be surprised at any outcome. I think I ended up having them in sixth in my preseason predictions out of seven. So I did end up going that they would finish that way. So I guess I was wrong in that regard. But yeah, I had them winning the series over Montreal. And you know, I changed my tune on them when they played well early. Because, again, they were just a huge wild card. And I think that was the general idea with them.
Did we
I think
not
I had
say
them
about,
first.
Did you? Yeah,
you them,
possible.
You had them first, Dewey?
No.
Did we not,
no, I didn't.
Did,
no.
Did we not say about the Winnipeg Jets, amongst not just the North, but the entire NHL, they may have the best collection of forwards?
Yeah, that was a frequent conversation with the top six. And I did some good hits with Sean Reynolds, too, on just like digital stuff about the depth they had up front. And it's always just been like a lack of uncertainty with the forwards. So I don't know how it went in the local market there or what it was specifically that has him feeling like they've been so wronged, but... Yeah, I don't know, man.
I'm with you. That. I'm with you though about the local market and them getting, you know, getting a protein shot here. Like, not that I'm saying that everything in life is a performance, but as far as doing what you need to give your local market a shot in the arm, Shafley did that. Like Shafley went out there and defended the city of Winnipeg and the Winnipeg Jets from everybody.
Blue collar hometown hard workers, this is a community. That's great.
Formula, right?
Like, it's good. He's not wrong, but it's funny.
We're not trying to crack the atom. We're not putting someone on the moon here. Like, we're just trying to, you know, rally a fan base that just got swept by the Montreal Canadiens. Like, in some instances, I really admire him going out there and taking bullets and taking the criticism just to help fire up that fan base. Like, remember the question we talked about last week? If you're a manager, would you lie to protect your team? Here's a question you ask of a hockey player. Would you go out there and knowingly say something you disagree with if you knew it would help your team and rally your fan base?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I will say that given what I've heard from Shifley, that seems like a layer of 4D chess I don't think he's doing here. I think this is mostly selfish behavior based on him feeling slighted and not getting the respect he thinks he and his teammates deserve.
You got to give yourself, you know, you got to be careful now, because now you're raising the stakes thinking, well, this is the reason why. And it's not getting any easier next year because you're going back into your normal division where it's going to be tougher. It's almost like any given Sunday where Al Pacino gives the big speech and then the other team gets a touchdown right off the field goal. So you got right off the kickoff. So you got to be careful here because you're raising the stakes. And if you don't deliver now, you know, and you start the season bad, well, they're going to be calling for some heads to roll there for sure.
Yep.
Okay, so that's Mark Shifley this morning at his media avail. A couple of things here before I get to the bottom of the hour. Jennifer Botterill, more on this with her in a couple of moments from Hockey Night in Canada. Carolina Hurricanes season is over. The Tampa Bay Lightning, 4-1 series win, 2-0 shutout. Andre Vasilevsky front and center. Rod Brindamore comparing him to Dominic Hasek, saying Hasek made it look hard, but you make it look easy. How do we look at this season for Carolina? It was a tough division, no doubt. They just bowed out to the defending Stanley Cup champions. No shame there. How do you evaluate, and they have, by the way, Carolina's got some nice cap space in the offseason. They don't have a goaltender under contract.
They're going to spend it? How's Tom Dundon doing during the recession?
Well, that's a great question. That's the million dollar question. But how do you evaluate Carolina's season, albeit as brief as it was. Barney, we'll start with you.
You just can't focus on the round you got to, which is funny, by the way, because we're just talking about Mark Scheifele proving everyone wrong because they went to the second round and got swept, and here we're talking about Carolina's, you know, failure of a season because they went to the second round, went five versus this defending cup champs.
Won a game,
Right, and won a game. Like, I think Carolina cannot be judged because they went only to the second round. I think they went up against the best team in hockey and lost. You know, whether you consider it them, Colorado or Vegas, it's kind of a toss-up. But so yeah, I think it was a fantastic season. I think, as you said, tough division. They played extremely well. Got a playoff round win. I thought that there's a lot to like with what they're doing, and I just thought they hit a really tough opponent who seems to be peaking right now.
Yeah,
I think they've overachieved the last couple of years. No, I think they've overachieved a little bit, but they're a good young team, and I think this experience of going through some playoff losses with guys contributing, young guys stepping up, Teravainen, Aho, Svechnikov, it's going to be really great for these guys. But remember, it's a young team, right? And for it's a high expectations for them to go in and beat this defending Stanley Cup champions. But, you know, they had some chances to tie up the series or get it a little bit closer, but that inexperience, I think, really... decimated their chances here. So I think their next step is Brendan Moore signing? Is he not? What's going on with the goaltending? What's going on with Dougie Hamilton? So you add a couple, I think you add a couple veteran pieces. Remember, this was a young, fast team that didn't know any better. So you add a couple more veteran guys that know what it takes to win, a couple more Jordan Staal type guys. I think this team is going to be a contender, but these young guys getting this experience, it's going to be very, very invaluable. And I think Carolina is going to be a contender a lot sooner than later than people think.
I'm glad you mentioned Rod Brind'Amour. Still without contract extension.
Something's up.
When we talk about free agents, right? When we talk about, okay, who's available in free agency in the offseason, certainly general managers think about that by way of players, but there may be a couple, and I would imagine Rod Brind'Amour would be at the top of that list. Coaches available. Like, if you're the New York Rangers, how are you not looking at this and going, ooh, man, would that be a nice fit here?
Yeah. You know, with like Carolina.
Dougie Hamilton's a big free agent there, but isn't Rod Brind'Amour too, Borny?
For sure. And, you know, we just talked yesterday about what if Barry Trotz had stayed with Washington, you know, after their Stanley Cup win. Is there a different fate there? And I kind of feel that way about Carolina. Like, be careful what you wish for with trying to save $1 million on a coach here. I understand $1 million is a lot of money, but, like, you got to pay to compete. And Brind'Amour has proven that his teams will compete in Carolina. So
I think that's the organization taking advantage of the type of person that Brind'Amour is. Like, he's not
isn't
money.
It?
You know, when I was there, you know, he was assistant coach because, you know, and he was high in the sky because he didn't want to come on the road. He wanted to enjoy his time at home. So, but at the same time, if a team comes out and offers you a $25 million deal, that's more than you probably made as a player. You're probably like, you know what, honey, I'll be back. I'll see you later.
Yeah, I'll be in the Big Apple.
I think Carolina's got to be careful and tread a little carefully because at the end of the day, I think money does talk at that level.
The thing about, and we'll go to break on this one, the thing about the Hurricanes with Rod Brind'Amour, I mean, he's coming in under market value for Carolina. Like, the number that Brind'Amour is going to hit, like, it's, okay, like, it's not Joel Quenneville, you know, Claude Julien-type numbers here, Mike Babcock. We're not talking about that. And Elliot's reported on this a couple of different times in different places, that he's coming in at a reduced number because of, as you mentioned, Stewie, the fit. He just wants everyone around him taken care of, right? Like, he wants his people taken care of. Man, I don't know how you let a coach like that walk if all it means is taking care of everyone around him.
Maybe they won't. Maybe this is
how
also
you let John Forslund walk.
Yeah,
There's another one.
I let Anthony Stewart walk.
Oh, it's ridiculous. The laundry list here.
Their mistake, our gain. And that will go to
Carolina's
break.
Cheap.
Jennifer Botterill.
I was going to say, it's a cheap place to live for Brind'Amour. Maybe he can justify the big hit because it's cheaper to live there. Anyway, take us to break.
Or he's already got large bank, too. Let's go to break. Jennifer Botterill, other side. More on the Bolts, the Canes. We got to get into Vegas and Colorado. What a game last night. We'll probably start there. Jennifer Botterill joins us from Hockey Night in Canada. Next, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is Hockey Central. We are back in a moment. The K Canes are out. Colorado on the brink. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We are pleased to be joined now by Jennifer Botterill of Hockey Night in Canada, who joins us to share her expertise on all of this. And Jen, first of all, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. We very much appreciate it. Before we get to Colorado-Vegas, and this has been roller coaster time, even just within that game yesterday, from the 2-0 lead, watching that vanish to Mark Stone. Mark Stone on a breakaway from his own blue line. Wow. In overtime. we're going to get to all of that, but I want to get, we were just talking about the Carolina Hurricanes and sort of, you know, what's next for the organization. And we're trying to, Jen, sort of give a snapshot of what we thought of their season. When you look at what Carolina went through this year, and sure, they bowed out in the second round, albeit at the hands of the defending Stanley Cup champions. How do you evaluate their season? Give us your take on the Canes.
Well, they're always an emotional story, right? When you have the motivator, Brind'Amour, that's it's always an interesting one to follow in terms of what he brings out in that team. So I think there's that emotional draw for people in terms of the messages that he shares, those snapshots and those videos you get from him in the locker room talking to the guys afterwards. So they're typically a team that you count out because of his ability to get those players going to play at their best. I mean, obviously they had a tough matchup. I mean, Tampa Bay they often run clinics on how the game should be played and puck possession and rushes and talent. So it's a tough opponent, but for Carolina, I always find them an intriguing team to follow, I think, because of that aspect of the leadership that he brings and how he can bring out the best in his players.
So with Carolina, do you think there's anything more they could have done to get back into the series? I know they blew the game in 4-2 lead in game four. So do you think it was anything they did, or is it just how dominant the Tampa Bay Lightning were?
Yeah, I mean, Anthony, it's a great question, but it's playoff hockey, so everything's always hard to predict. But, you know, watching Tampa Bay, even over the course of the last few seasons, I am consistently impressed. You know, whether it's watching them on television or watching them at ice level or rinkside, they have an amazing ability with their puck possession game, their speed, and then their offensive talent, whether it's 5-on-5 or on the power play. I mean, some of the goals that they've scored, even just in this last series, are so spectacular to watch. So, I mean, it's tough to say if Carolina could have done anything differently when they're up against such an impressive team.
Jen, what do you made of the big swing in this Colorado-Vegas series? You know, Colorado goes up 2-0. Last night, they lose it on the back of Mark Scheifele's awful skating, amazing talent.
Mark Stone.
Such a pretty player, or such a great player, just not the prettiest one to watch. But what have you made of the swing in this series and Colorado's ability to get it back?
Well, it is. That's the one thing about the game, is that there can be such huge momentum swings. And that's was the example that we saw last night. I mean, it's been great hockey to watch this series. And last night was a prime example where you think that Colorado is looking comfortable. They've got the 2-0 lead, and the way they're playing, they sort of found some more space on the ice. That was a big approach for them in game five. They feel like Vegas had been taking away their space. They're a team that likes to use their speed through the neutral zone. So for the first, you know, two periods last night, you saw Colorado using their speed to their advantage, and then they gained this lead. And going to third, you think it's going to be a little hard for Vegas to sort of change that. But they get the goal, that first goal to make it a 2-1 game, and then everything switched. Everything switched in terms of the energy, in terms of the speed, in terms of the environment. So, I mean, then it was all Vegas. And so it's been exciting to follow this series, and especially when Colorado's been so good on home ice, for Vegas to get that big win in. I mean, it's a big challenge ahead for Colorado. And again, they have so much depth on their roster. But Vegas has just played so well and been resilient. I think, you know, the description I use for them is they've been persistent, right? They're down two. They were blown out in game one, but they were really persistent, you know, in the next two games and how they've played, and they executed in those big moments, right down to Stone on that breakaway. I mean, he executed on that play and that shot. So they deserve full credit for their effort last night.
Let's stay with Mark Stone here, because as Borny mentions a second ago, not the most graceful skater, clearly not the fastest skater, but every single coach would have this guy in their top six. The majority of the NHL would have him on their top line. Mm-hmm. He may be the most complete player in the entire NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Coach's dream, all of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
As an ex-player, like, what do you see when you look at Mark Stone and you see his game? What jumps out at you?
Well, he's the leadership that he brings, but getting it done in those big moments. And last night's goal was a great example of that. Even in terms of how he got that shot off, he knew the pressure was coming. Yep. I mean, the release of the shot happens just before they get a stick on it. And I feel like that's what you want. You want your big guys and your big players, your star players, to come through in those moments when it's key. And, you know, he's a character person. I remember even on doing a special feature for Hometown Hockey and getting the chance to spend some time with him for the feature. And you just knew that he was a character guy that teams like to have. You need to have that. If you want to have successful teams, you've got to have great personalities to go along with that talent on the ice. And that is what he brings, and it certainly was able to shine through last night.
So, you know, most people are looking at the standings or just how the playoffs are going and thinking it's a foregone conclusion. The winner of this Vegas-Colorado series is just going to come in and sweep Montreal. But, again, you've watched pretty much every game up closely. Do you think Montreal has a chance?
Yes, I do. I mean, yes. Vegas or Colorado, I mean, this has been two heavyweights in terms of talent and what these two teams have. So it's been exceptional hockey to watch. But Montreal's story and how they've performed as a team, the goaltending of Carey Price, who, when they swept that series, if you saw his reaction when the buzzer sounded to end the game, there wasn't much celebration. He was all business, right? He grabbed that water bottle and he was just, you know, off to the bench that, you know what, what's next? And the thing about Montreal is they have found this balance, right, between these veteran guys that have won before and these young guys, you know, that are coming up in Suzuki and Kotkaniemi and Caulfield, who have been vocal about learning from these guys, but also bringing their own assertiveness and their own confidence. And that combined with great defending and keeping their opponents off the scoreboard, all of those things cannot be ignored. So, yes, Colorado or Vegas, certainly the favorites, but when you look at those details from Montreal, I think they have this perspective and this attitude of they're enjoying it, they're competitors, and they believe within that locker room and within that organization that they can be successful in the next round too.
You know, I'm not sure on the other side of the NHL that there's an easy path forward for Tampa Bay. I think a lot of us have been talking about them as, you know, cup favorites at this point, but going up against the Islanders or the Bruins, do you think they prefer to see one of those two teams come through? And either way, is it just like Tampa's too good that it's not going to matter after this? Or where do you stand on the Lightning?
Well, they are good, so they certainly deserve a lot of credit. There's no question about that. But Boston and New York, the Islanders, they can be really tough teams to play against. And there are some similarities with how they've played the game that we've seen in this series against each other. And, you know, even you look at it's certainly not all the favorites that have won the rounds in the playoffs that everybody predicted to this point. So you come and you say, oh, well, yeah, sure, Tampa Bay is the favorite and their past history and how they're playing. But it's the same thing with both Boston and New York, that they have the combination of character, leadership, and a defense first mentality that makes it hard for opponents, and they try to take away that time and space. So I think if this year of playoffs is any indication, we can't always predict what might happen.
Is there and we're with Jennifer Botterill from Hockey Night in Canada. Is there one story, and maybe it's the obvious one, like the Montreal run is impressive, mm-hmm. and you know, down 3-1 to the Maple Leafs, all of that, fans at the Bell Center, fans outside the Bell Center, it's the, the ghosts of the Forum, like all of it, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the obvious answer because we all live here in Canada, but mm-hmm. you watch it all. Is there one or two stories that has really, you know, piqued your curiosity, and you look at it and you say, you know what, this is really interesting to me, Jennifer Botterill. What is it, Jen?
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff, as you said, I mean, the Montreal story is
sure
is intriguing, no question. If there's another one that comes to mind for me, the performance of Fleury for Vegas, and same thing, that he's a guy that people appreciate and like, you know, just in terms of the personality he brings. You even think back to the interview that Colby Armstrong did with Sidney Crosby and talking about yep. Fleury, that, you know, he's just a friend. And then to see him at this stage of his career thriving and performing so well that, you know, even in the last game, right, he let in that first goal and then there was sort of the review and he just sort of puts his hand up and said, you know what, that's on me, right? That's on me. I'm going to respond and take the responsibility to be better and to help our team be successful in this game. So I think his career on how it's gone and the type of person that he is and his character and his personality and his sense of humor, I think are all things that are just, again, a great story to follow. And so to see him doing so well and just the energy and enthusiasm, and then even that the goaltending duo with Leonard, that, you know, in game four throwing his hat on the ice, I mean, that's just I think a display of some great characters. So I think the Fleury story has been one that's been nice to follow.
Jennifer, down to business now. Borny cash in a structured settlement with J.G. Wentworth and Bet the Farm on the Islanders winning the Cup. Who do you have winning the Stanley Cup of the teams remaining?
Oh, wow. Oh, this is tough. Oh, I'm going to say Montreal. I'm going to say that they can they can come through and make it happen. But it's going to be tough. All the teams are playing well right now, but I'll say that they have that potential.
Are you wearing your Team Canada jersey right now? You don't have to represent us all the time.
Did I see you at the CN Tower?
Yeah. That's great. I wanted to get your thoughts on Bruce Cassidy's complaints to the referee about not getting the calls and then the Islanders being the Saints. And if you really believe that a coach's comments can swing a referee in a game, I kind of think it's possible, and sometimes it's not the worst idea. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, yeah, people, it's certainly made headlines that it's something that people are going to pay attention to, but you know, and yeah, maybe it's a subconscious thing for the officials, but it's also their job to make sure that in every situation they're professional, they're calling the game as they see it and as fairly as possible. But hey, these coaches certainly want to stand up for their teams. And so whether it makes a difference in the officiating or it's just another display to show their confidence and their trust in their players and how they play, that's something that Cassidy felt was necessary.
What I'm curious, when you played, how much were you on officials and amongst your teammates? I'm going to try to get you to bust on Cassidy here. Who was the worst at chirping at officials?
Cass was the motivator, right? I don't think she was the one that was going to chirp the officials. If anyone was getting fired up about it, she would be the one that would be pulling back on their jersey to make sure that we weren't making silly mistakes. But I think as a player, you're intense, obviously, and if calls aren't going your way, or you know, I remember times in my career where you felt like you weren't getting the calls that you wanted, no question. But it's figuring out how you channel that intensity and the energy. So you can make a quick comment, whether it's to your teammates or to yourself out on the ice, and then you've got to move on. You can't live in that space for the rest of the game. So it's figuring out, okay, if you're frustrated, but then there's certain things that are beyond your control. So as an athlete, it's just, you know, shifting that around and how you use that to fuel your performance.
Before we let you go, did you get a chance to see or hear the Mark Scheifele comments from this morning?
I haven't seen them yet this morning, heard them yet this morning.
Okay, so essentially Scheifele was, you know, talking about how, you know, he wasn't shut down by Deneau. He was shut down by the Department of Player Safety. Took a good swipe at the media saying everyone wrote us off and we did marvelous things this year. Like, I always look at comments like that, and you know, he talked about this, you know, the team, and he talked about Paul Maurice and defended him even though he benched him in the game against Toronto, etc. I always look at comments like that, Jennifer, and I say to myself, athletes are almost programmed like that. Like, they need to have that sense of everyone's out to get me. I need an obstacle. I need a hurdle. I need, you know, challenges. I wonder if you felt the same way when you played. Like, did you need to have a sense of defiance and a sense that everybody was out to get you, or there were obstacles placed in front of you to bring out the best in you?
I mean, that's a great question, Jeff. And I think back to different points in my career, and I'm sure, you know, the rest of the guys with you too, everybody's going to have a different feeling when they look back at their experiences in sport. You know, I think there were times where that could be great motivation, but every athlete's going to be different on how, on what motivation they need to perform at their best. So for me, I definitely think of times where, you know, individually and as a team, we had faced a lot of adversity, and you needed that edge and that focus that you were out to prove something, and sort of that perspective of no matter what, you're going to go out and to be successful. I also think there's an argument on the other side of things where if things are going well and you are having success, that can build up a positive momentum and energy for your performance as well. So in certain situations, and there might be some athletes that feel like they need that defiance or that edge to prove people wrong or to rise above it. But I think there can also be a lot said for building up a player's confidence or building up the team's confidence and to perform really, really well in those situations too.
Excellent analysis as always. And you're right. That was a really good question by me. Borny and Stewie will never admit it. Neither will our producer. But thank you for the compliment, gold medalist. Thanks, Jennifer. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs. We'll check back soon.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Great to chat with you guys.
There she is. Thanks, Jennifer Botterill from Hockey Night in Canada. We'll hit a quick break. Only one game on the board tonight. It is the Islanders. It is the Boston Bruins. Stewie mentioning, I think that you're all in on the Islanders, Borny. No surprise there. But Bruce Cassidy, Borny, says Tuukka Rask is ready to go. We'll get your thoughts on that when Hockey Central returns on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a flash. All right, welcome back to the program. Only one game in the NHL as the Montreal Canadiens wait. The Boston Bruins and the New York Islanders, 7:30 Eastern. This one on Sportsnet and CBC. Borny, you can take as long as you want here. Islanders, Bruins, Rask is back. Cassidy says he's ready to go.
I hope he's ready to go like he was ready to go last game. I'll take that version of Tuukka Rask anytime as an Islanders fan. Minus 130 is what Boston pays in Nassau Coliseum tonight. I cannot believe they're the favorite. You can get the Islanders as an underdog at home, and they're up 3-2 in the series. Oh, let's go. Let's go. Fans are already in the parking lot, by the way. True story.
Stewie, what do you think?
I think it's going to be Spain minus the S for the Boston Bruins.
I love it.
And they say this country has no poets. Ladies and gentlemen, Anthony Stewart on Hockey Central. Smith and Jones next.